Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. I'm Jason Abrams, and this is the place where we lift the curtain on the world of real estate like never before. Every week, I sit down with visionaries, pirates, and mavericks. We're here to document, demonstrate, and most importantly, demystify their game-changing models and systems. What secrets propel them to the top? And how are they living their dreams? This is about passion, it's about strategy, but above all, it's about real, tangible success. So buckle up and let's dive in. This is the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. You know how some people win sometimes, and then there's these other people that seem to win all the time? Those people are called perennial winners. Friends, we're about to meet a team that has won the best in the Saratoga region for 5 years running. They've grown by over 300%. They do a couple hundred transactions with only five agents on the team, and that blew my mind. We're gonna hear, how do you actually build an organization that has low numbers of people, but high amounts of volume? And that is a conversation worth having. Friends, sit back, buckle up. This is Christine Marcosella. Christine, how are you?
Hey, Jason. I am great. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure to have you, coming all the way from upstate New York, Saratoga area. And y'all are crushing it. Y'all do 160 plus units a year, 70 to 100 million in volume. It's a fantastic business. But we've learned that nobody starts that successful. So I want to go all the way back to the beginning. How did you end up in the greatest industry in the world?
Well, I was a third grade teacher, and I started my third grade teaching career making $28,000. I got recruited from Boston, where I went to college, to Florida. And they had this whole campaign, teach at the beach. And I was like, yep, I want to teach at the beach. This is 2006. Florida was desperate for teachers. They were in a housing boom, as you know. And I moved off to Florida by myself right from college, and I started teaching for $28,000 a year. Well, I discovered that the Florida public school system was,
Lacking.
And also, I had 28 kids to myself. It was just a grind. What I realized was teachers get kind of taken advantage of. And I watched all these teachers around me that had been there for 20, 30 years. And when you're teaching, you can see the pay scale. You know what you're going to make at the end. You know that you're going to put 30 years in of emotional turmoil and blood, sweat, and tears, and you're going to make $42,000 if you're awesome. And you're going to get your master's degree, and you're going to have $1,500 pay rates. It was exhausting emotionally, and I felt very, it just felt unjust to me, and I didn't like that feeling. So I started just thinking about, like, gosh, what else can I do? I have a degree in elementary education and psychology. There wasn't really anything I could do. And Jason, I was looking on the internet at all kinds of jobs. Like, I just wanted to be rewarded for the effort that I was putting in. And there was a time, I'm not joking, where I considered selling food out of a food truck, literally like a salesperson, because I saw that you could make $70,000 a year if you were like great at that. And I was like, I'm about to do that. I mean, I really told my parents that, and they're like, are you nuts? Like,
isn't it so crazy? My mom was a teacher for 33 years, and she got the master's degree. And I think that the people that are spending their time pouring into the next generation, they should be the highest paid people on the planet. Because, look, Gary Keller, he's a teacher.
Yeah.
And you're a teacher. My mom was a teacher. Why do you think that teachers, at least in the school system as it's designed today, are not financially rewarded, yet they do such an important job?
Like I said, they're being taken advantage of because teaching is a calling. And I can't tell you how many times I heard people say that, well, it's a calling. And they felt this internal conflict between the calling and what they deserved or what they were going to stand up for in terms of pay. And they felt like a lot of social service workers do, like, I deserve to be underpaid because this is a calling and it's just what I'm meant to do. And they're taken advantage of. And whether that's known or not known or on purpose, I don't know. But I couldn't take that. I was like, this just isn't right. And I loved teaching. I loved the kids. I loved making a difference. I loved serving an underserved population, which is where I was teaching. But I couldn't do it in that unjust of an environment. And that's ultimately what made me leave.
Do you end up on the Swanson truck selling frozen foods?
No, thank God. Because in 2006, so I taught for 3 years. We were about to get married. And so my husband had moved down from Boston now, and he lived there in Florida with me. And we had bought our first house. And as we're discussing like our marriage plans and whatnot, it comes out that he doesn't really love Florida. So he wants to live back in New York, which is where we're both from. So we decide to move. So we list our house for sale by owner, which I think is just such a classic story, right? Like a lot of for sale by owners turn into real estate agents. And we list our house for sale by owner, and we go through that whole process, which is a whole nother podcast. But ultimately, we did end up having a buyer agent bring the buyer, and we paid her. And she was terrible. And it was just such a terrible experience that honestly, I started thinking like, this woman, I am handing over $12,000 or whatever it was, $8,000. And she was so bad and offered zero value. I'm like, I could do this so much better. And also my dad did have his real estate license. So that wasn't his career, but he had his license and he was kind of dabbling. So I knew that that job existed in the world. But that's what led me to that final decision of, this sounds a little better than the food truck, so maybe I'm going to give it a shot. And at the time, frankly, I was still planning on teaching. Because in New York, much better teaching environment, much better pay. Maybe you could make $60,000 instead of $40,000. And I was like, okay. And I still have it. Like these binders that I was making and mailing to principals and trying to get these interviews and jobs. But turns out elementary education with a master's degree in reading in New York State was a dime a dozen at the time. And to get into a core job in a good elementary school, you had to substitute teach for a long time. Not so much today, but back then it was very difficult to get in. So we moved back to New York. I did a couple of rounds of substitute teaching and was like, absolutely not. I am not doing this. If you don't want me and you don't want to hire me, like I didn't even get an interview. I didn't even have a chance to get hired. I'm not making $12 an hour and driving to, you know, an hour to substitute in the high school art class, like not happening. And so I just made the decision right there that I was going to go for it. And I signed up for that real estate school.
So now you're a real estate agent. You're in New York, arguably one of the most competitive marketplaces in the world for real estate. Is it just success from the minute you start?
No. And a sidebar, I'm not in New York City, so it's not very competitive here. I mean, it's competitive, but we're kind of old school up here in upstate. We're about 10 years behind the rest of the industry, so it's a little bit different. But no, it was rough. We had just gotten married, so we had about $10,000 from our wedding gift in a bank account. And the theory was, I'm going to give this a shot because we have this money to live off of. And if I don't make it by the time that money runs out, I guess I will just go back to my substitute teaching and I'll figure it out and it'll have been a good faith effort. So I started and I was at a different brokerage and they had a good training program and I did all the things that I was supposed to do and I went into the office every day and I'm not a great natural prospector. So I did things that I felt were congruent with who I naturally was, such as I could answer the phone on desk duty. And if somebody called in and they were ready, willing, and able buyer or seller, like they were not leaving my web. I started in July of 2006, so I didn't have a full first year. But at that year's award ceremony, I remember watching the person winning the Rookie of the Year award. And I was like, that's my award. I'm going to win that next year. And so then the next year I did win that. I mean, I only think I sold 12 homes. It wasn't like some great success story, but I got that award. And then it was just a slow build from there to where we are today.
So you're kind of known within our circles as the creator of this idea, strategic team building. And it's an interesting concept. Unpack it for me. What does that actually mean?
So strategic team building means nothing more than learning about how things work and how things are done in a best practice way and executing. That's all it means. It's not a magic pill or a magic model or system. It's just executing.
And because I know you, I want to bring the audience along because we have people that listen to this show from all over in all different industries. You don't consider yourself to be the classic salesperson, lead generation guru who's going to go be a world beater simply through magnetism. You're a models and systems person. Talk to me about that.
I grew into being a models and systems person. When I was at the previous brokerage, I was just lollygagging around thinking I was top dog, selling $8 million of real estate, making $175,000. I come from nothing, right? So my family doesn't have money. Like, I've never had money. I thought I was awesome. It happened. So when that company sold and I joined Keller Williams, which was in 2014, that's when I became a models and systems person, because I spent that first year, actually that first 2 years, learning everything I possibly could about all of this whole new world, because I didn't know anything. I didn't know real estate was a business. I just knew how to convert a buyer and sell a home and give good advice. And I didn't even have a database, Jason. Like, I remember meeting my OP, Mark Weiss, and he said to me, "You're doing $8 million and you don't even have a database." He's like, "You're a $20 million agent disguised as an $8 million agent." And I was like, "That's ridiculous. I'll never sell $20 million worth of real estate." But I just spent that time learning. I went to every class Keller Williams offered so that I could know it all before I act. And I think that that's part of the strategic part of it, is understanding first so I don't have to do it wrong 50 times and unwind it and then go, "I guess I'll go to that class."
Okay, so walk me through this linearly. I want to take a look at my business, or I want to build a business. Tell me exactly how to do that. How do I use strategic team building as a tool?
So the first thing I think you want to do is you've got to nail that first hire. That first hire is so critical to any business, because if you do it right, that person is going to build the foundation with you for the entire future of your organization. And I think that that is such an undervalued thing when people start team building, or they start to hire an assistant or think about it, is they're in so much pain and they've been told, "Oh, you should hire." And they just grab the first warm body. I mean, that is just what I've seen time and time again. My friend's kid, they really just get it wrong with that first hire. And then they go, "It doesn't work." So the first absolute step is by far putting in the time and effort to find the right person. And also, I've heard Gary say this before and I couldn't agree more. It's not how little you can pay someone, it's how much can I pay someone. And I think that that is so true with that first foundational hire on a real estate team.
By the way, I know y'all are driving while you're listening. Don't worry about taking notes. I'm taking the notes. You can sign up for the notes at mreanotes.com, and we email them out every Thursday. So this Thursday, we'll be sending out Christine's notes from this episode, so you'll get this all step-by-step in a PDF. Let me ask you this. When you say put in the time and effort to make that first hire, what do I actually do? Like, what is the time and effort?
So the time on the front end is learning how to hire and learning about the person you are looking for. A lot of people hire themselves, and that is not the right thing to do, especially when you are a traditional agent that is all about sales. They look for somebody who's outgoing like them, who they're going to be buddy-buddy with, who they're going to get along with. And that is really not the type of person that you're looking for. So you're going to want to do some sort of training or education around hiring and around what type of personality is going to match the role that you're looking for first. So that's the work on the front end.
Why is it so important that the personality matches the work?
Because if they don't, if they're not a good personality match for the work that they're doing, they're going to leave. A talented person can do any job, but they won't stay in a role that doesn't line up with their personality type. For example, if you hire somebody who's the mayor of the town and they just love people and you get along with them so well, and you put them at a desk and you ask them to be your assistant and to input stuff into the MLS. And I mean, they might do it for a little while, but eventually they're going to burn out. And that's when people just stop, because they say, "This doesn't work. This hiring thing doesn't work. I've done it 3 times now. People keep leaving," and they fail to look internally at what is going wrong with the hire. So there is a lot of work to do on the front ends in terms of just understanding the type of person you're looking for and how you're going to find them. And a big mistake that people also make is they think they have to have all of their jobs and systems. And what is this person going to do? And they have to have all that ready to go when they hire this person. And that's not the case at all. You know, that's a big misconception. This person should help you to build all of those systems and all of the ways you do things. They shouldn't walk into it built for them. You don't have to wait to have it all built out for someone.
I love that. So prior to making the hire, I have to create or take a course that gives me a model or a system on how to go make the hire.
Absolutely.
Who I'm trying to hire and the right personality.
Yes.
And then number three, you said put in effort. What is the effort?
The effort is, again, now you've done all the work up front. You've got the person, you think they're the right fit. You've gone to the classes, you have a plan for them. And then they start and you abandon them. When someone starts, if you want to nail it with them, if you want them to be the person that is going to be the foundational builder with you of your future business, you have to put in the man hours with them. And that is something that is difficult to do because when we're at the point of hiring, we're in the most pain, right? So we're running around with our heads cut off. We finally have this person and we want to just say, oh, I did it. I hired the right person. Like, it's yours. Have fun. And that's not going to also get you the best outcome because they're going to feel abandoned.
What do you say to the person who's listening right now that says, I want to hire someone amazingly talented, but I don't have the money to pay someone who's amazingly talented for a full year? So what do I do?
Funny you would ask, because I felt exactly the same way. And luckily, I was convinced of, you know, a concept in the MREA book that is basically red light, green light, and also the 30-day, 60-day, 90-day concept. So if you have the funds to pay somebody for 3 months, then you are basically committing to them being able to pay for themselves after that 3 months is over. You should never have to pay somebody for a full year before you get any sort of return out of them. You should know by the end of 90 days whether or not they're freeing you up to make more money in your business. And so I was deathly afraid of this. This is one of the reasons I waited too long to hire, because I was thinking I had to have $40,000 sitting in an account ready to go. And that's not the case. So you need to have 3 months and clear standards for that role for the first month. What should they be able to do by the second month? And by the third month, really, that's when you should start to feel that freedom that you're looking for. And they should really be taking enough off of your plate where you can now run and you'll be able to see that now that you don't have to edit photos and put them in the MLS and write MLS descriptions and post on social media and talk to your clients about all the minutiae and answer the phone, all the things that this assistant is going to do for you, you literally have 70% of your time back, and you're going to really see fast how that person is going to pay for themselves. And I promise you more, much more, if you've got the right person.
I love that. Okay. Step one, nail the first hire. What's step two?
So after you nail that first hire, now you're in that system building phase, but they're doing it. So what you need to do is just brain dump everything that you think possibly gets done in your business. You don't have to build the system around it. You just need to say, okay, we need a system for open houses. We need a system for lead follow-up. We need a system for listing presentations, whatever it is. Everything you do every single day, make a blanket list. One of the first things I realized when I hired my assistant was like, they can do things in 10 minutes that would be weighing on my mind for an entire day. And I would think they were these big tasks, but they actually weren't. So that person's job, in addition to your assistant tasks, is system building. Now, in a combination of watching what I do, asking me what I do, and just on your own thinking of how this will work between you and I want you to take a stab at writing the initial system, and then I'm going to reveal it. So that was how I got a lot of it done without me taking the opposite approach, which is I build it and then you see if it works. It's you go ahead and build it and then I'll look it over.
You know, the interesting thing about that is so many of us are high drivers and we're type A personalities. And so we think that the way that we do it is the only way it should ever be done. But oftentimes when we empower somebody, the highest form of empowerment is them knowing that they're going to go build it getting our thoughts around it and then building it as opposed to us doing it.
Yeah. And it's just more efficient. Like, I'm an efficiency person, and I obviously, I'm not going to pretend that that wasn't a struggle. Like, I like things done the way I want them done, but for efficiency's sake, them writing it out the way they think, even if it's 40% wrong, that's better than me doing 100%. Me correcting 40% and saying, actually, I think it's going to work best this way is still a time saver.
I love that. Okay, so nail the first hire, get into the systems building phase. What do I do next?
Now you've got to figure out who you are as a team and an organization. Because if you don't have a clear value, or if you don't know who you are and what you're doing, you don't know how to do the next step, which is to attract the right people onto your team. You want to attract people onto your team based on what you have to offer. So this is why it drives me absolutely bonkers when people are constantly asking others for their mission statement or their values, or can I have a copy of your whatever it is? Like, that's fine if you're going to use it as just a template, but this stuff is critical. Like, you have to know who you are as a team. Your team is an extension of you ultimately. So who are you as a real estate agent, and what is your business known for? What is your superpower? And then you're going to create your values and your belief systems and your mission statement around that. Because when you go out to hire, it's, again, not just, oh, you look like a good agent, like, join my team. That will explode in your face. It's got to be attracting them to what you have to offer. And that is the key to long-term loyalty. So once you figure out who you are, then you can start putting that out into the world to start attracting talent to your team.
So let me ask you this. I understand my mission statement. I understand the word values, and I understand the word belief. How do I make that actually live and breathe? Because I think a lot of people go through this exercise and they end up with a sheet of paper, then they laminate it, then it goes into a drawer somewhere, and the world moves on. It sounds like you're using it as a tool.
If it's authentic, you don't have to make it do anything. It already lives and breathes. So it's got to be authentic. And that's why it's so important that it's not a copy. It's not like, oh, Christine's values are this, this, and this. I love that. So therefore, those are my values. That isn't going to be able to live and breathe because it's not who you are. Like, for example, I know a lot of teams whose values include the words like fun. That's their number one value. Well, I'm not that fun, and neither is being on my team. That's why it's important to attract people who are like-minded to your values, because otherwise they won't stay.
Well, so that's the next step. So I've nailed the first hire. I went through the systems building phase. I got wildly clear on who I am, what my superpower is, what is my values, what are my beliefs, what's my mission statement. The next step is building now the team, getting the right people on it. How do I do that?
So it depends on what type of team you want to build. For me, we built a specialist team. We followed 100% the old school MREA model, and I built it exactly that. So when I hired my first, at the time, it wasn't a showing assistant. The model was hire your buyer's agent first. So I hired a buyer specialist, and the most important decision I ever made was to give her all of my buyers when I made that hire. I didn't cherry pick. I didn't say, you're going to take these and I'm going to take these. I just went for it and dove in head first and said, when I get this person that I trust 100% to be an extension of me, I'm going to pour into them just like I did with the assistant. And then I'm going to let them free, and I'm going to give them an amazing opportunity. And that's exactly what we did. And that person's still with me today.
How many years later?
Six.
6 years later, and thriving.
She's thriving, and she is on the borderline of even being out of production.
Congratulations on that. So,
thank you.
It sounds like step one then is figure out exactly which seats on the bus I want to fill.
Yeah.
You started with your key administrative person who helped you build the systems. The next step was finding a buyer's agent that matched your values, beliefs, and could live your mission statement.
That's right. And some people don't want to build a specialist model anymore, and that's okay too. And some people want to build an industrial type team where it's just about, you know, I'm going to act as a brokerage essentially, and I'm going to take on anybody who would like to join. And both ways are perfectly fine, as long as, again, you know what the value is that they are signing up for and you're delivering it.
I want to talk about this idea because teams often get started by wild ass entrepreneurs, and that's a great thing. And they just start going and they're running, and then they're growing, and then they're growing, and they're running, and then they grow, and they grow, and they grow, and they grow, and they run, and they run, and they run. And before you know it, they look up and they may have built something that they never set out to build. She's saying you have to know what it is that you want. And she gives you this idea that you're either building this small group of specialized people or a large group, sort of like an industry team, which she compares to sort of like a brokerage. And here's the thing. Nikki Miller, and if you haven't listened to her show, go do that, because what she said to me resonates. She said, Jason, in life, you get to number one, pick your problems. Number two, pick how you pay to solve them. And that's exactly what Christine is talking about. Now, I'll give you an example. If you said to me, Jason, I want to build the largest team in the country by agent count, no problem. In that moment, you have picked your problem, and now you get to pick how to solve it. Well, what will some of those problems be? Number one, you're going to have to recruit a lot of people. So recruiting is going to need to be solved. Number two, you're going to have to solve onboarding because you're going to be onboarding a ton of people. Number three, you are going to have to solve education because you have to get all these people into production. Number four, you are going to have to solve support because people have problems. Number five, and I could go on and on and on, ending with you are going to need to offboard people and you're going to have to figure that out. Now, if you go the other way and you say, Jason, I'm going to have a very small group of people that have high volume. You've now picked your problem. Number one, you don't need to go recruit a ton of people, but you better go recruit the right people. And that sometimes is a challenge. Number two, talented people are going to look up and they're going to spell love, T-I-M-E, and they're going to want a bunch of your time. Number three, they better have a trajectory and be growing and be making money and growing in their personal and business lives, or talented people don't stick around, that I can continue and go on and on. Here's my point. Everybody has to decide. You see, you have to decide what it is that you're building because all these businesses are built differently. They're built with different models. They're built with different systems. They're built with different org charts, and they ultimately yield a different profit margin. Start by asking the question, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 5 years from now, what is it that I want to own? And what do I want to be spending my time doing? That's a question that everybody should stop and think about.
My value was, again, the specialist model, and therefore you're going to have all these leads handed to you, and I have systems and somebody to help you out as an assistant already, and here we go. As an industrial team, you're acting more as a brokerage. So your value is probably training, leads. It's less intense in terms of the you have your own assistant and you have this and that. So just you got to figure out why people are joining you in order to keep them there.
How many agents do you have now?
We only have five that are like what I would call our core team, but we just launched a parallel team to our core specialist team because I just realized our strength was becoming our weakness. You know, it's still our strength, this core specialist team that runs highly efficiently with an average of 25 deals an agent. That's running, but it's also holding us back, especially growing through the market of the last couple of years. So we launched what we call the Pro Team, which is more of a brokerage model. So we have four agents on that, and then we have our specialist team. So we're up to now about 9 or 10 total agents, but that part's brand new.
You know, the thing that I find interesting, and I think it speaks directly to the process that you're using, which is, you know, 160 plus transactions a year, five people in the organization. This is a highly productive group of individuals. And as I'm talking to you, and I think everyone in the audience would say the same thing, you don't play. Like, you're going to come here, you're going to be in a highly productive work environment. If we have a few laughs and some fun along the way, so be it. But this is about supporting you professionally.
Yeah. Who wants to work this hard? I mean, real estate is freaking hard. Who wants to work that hard and make a teacher salary? I don't, and I don't want anybody in my orbit to be making that. I want them, you know, the goal is always going to be $100,000 plus. If they fall a little short, then we're going to figure out what it is that we can do to get them ramped up again. But through the specialist model that we chose back in 2018, that's when I made my first hire, when we chose to be a specialist model, my goal was always that the business was going to force us to grow and not vice versa. If we didn't have enough business, we weren't growing. When we were all at our capacity, we grew. So that's what kept it highly productive over those years.
That's genius. That'll be in the notes, friends. Have no fear. Walk me through a few of the standards. And I know you keep a lot of standards, and they're not suggestions in your world. You hold them as standards. So if I'm out there and I'm kind of thinking about how I want to set standards for my agents, give us a few of yours.
So I think you have to be really careful with standards, because if you set a standard and you don't keep it, you immediately are disqualified in terms of any other standard you ever want to hold. So even though we are a highly productive environment and we have a standard of being, we don't have a whole lot of standards in terms of you need to do X, Y, Z, 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 Z. The standard is 24 units a year. Now, we have had agents that don't hit that, and we make an improvement plan and we will give them another chance. An agent will self-select out. If they get on an improvement plan and they're just like, I am not going to make it, they'll self-select out. I don't have to necessarily let them go because they're not meeting the standard.
And I love this idea. We have a standard of being, and that is 24 units per year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that really absolves, in some ways, having to have 300 standards. You have one standard that you're going to hold, and that's going to force behaviors in order to hit that.
Yeah. The only other thing that is a standard other than the type of person they are being, you know, and the way they're servicing clients is 2 open houses a month for the buyer's agents. That's it. Those are our 2 standards.
All right. So number one, I got to nail the first hire. Number two, I got to build and I got to go through the phase of building the systems. Number three, I got to decide who we are as a team. What do we offer? What's our superpower? What's our values, beliefs? That's the only way that I can figure out step four. Who are the type of agents that are going to be attracted to me and that I want to attract? Any other steps?
The last thing is just always growing yourself as a leader, because you have a new job now. Now that you have a fully functioning team, regardless of if you stay in production or if you get out of production, you are now a leader. And that is a 100% different skill set than being a real estate agent. So if you never develop that side of you, people will ultimately, great people are going to develop themselves all the time. They're going to grow. They're going to go to the Keller Williams classes. If they start to get ahead of where you are as a leader, that's another way they will leave. Even if you have the best organization, if they don't feel like you're keeping up with them on a personal growth level and you're able to challenge them with new concepts, you can only do the same personal growth activities so many times. You need to figure out a new one to do and a new one and challenge them more. So I think developing yourself as a leader and being able to lead your organization, no matter how big or small, or if you're in production or not, is the final stage.
By the way, if you're new to the show, when we talk about Gary, we're talking about Gary Keller. And together with Jay Papasan and Dave Jenks, he wrote the book, The Millionaire Real Estate Agent, which is the namesake for this program. And Gary always says the path of any successful business mirrors the personal growth of that business's founder and leaders. And I think it speaks to exactly what you just said, Christine. I think you nailed that.
I look at leadership, like when I think of like, how can I be a better leader? I think about people who are leading me, and I think about where are they going right and where are they going wrong? And I am just aware of that at all times. So I think just kind of having that awareness of how do you want to be treated? How does it feel to you when somebody says they're going to do something and they don't? How does it feel when they say they're going to meet with you and they don't show up, or they meet with you and they're like, what do you want to talk about? Does that feel like somebody that you want to be around and that you want to put in charge of your future? So just be observant of the leaders in your world and how you feel about them, and then emulate the best parts of it.
You are fierce and powerful, and it's palpable through the earbuds. I love the way that you lead. And the way you're showing up for this audience is probably the way that you show up in life. It is so apparent to me why you've had the success that you have.
Thank you. That's a very nice compliment.
Well, I feel lucky to have spent the time. We want to invite you to our lightning round. This is where we ask you a series of questions. We want the first thing that comes into your mind. Will you play with us?
I'll play.
What is your favorite color?
Teal.
Stop the lightning round. We've never had a teal. It's fantastic. It's okay. We're back in. What is your favorite food?
Lobster.
Stop the lightning round. It's so good.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Are you a boiled, steamed? What do you think the best way to go is?
Boiled, I guess. I need lobster that's boiled hot with butter, but a lobster roll must be cold with mayonnaise.
100%. Anything else is completely unacceptable. I read recently, though, that steaming, because it releases the skin from the shell slower, the lobster meat pops out cleaner.
Ah.
So it's a less intrusive way to cook the lobster. I digress.
I'll try that next time.
What is your favorite movie?
Tommy Boy.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Okay. With this, friends, I don't even have to say anything. This could go so many ways. Of course, it's Tommy Boy. Do you have a favorite place that you vacation?
Yeah, I think St. John in the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Gorgeous. Is there a book that you think everyone that's listening to you today should read other than MREA and The One Thing and all the good stuff?
So I think we didn't really touch on this today, but one of the things that I think is our superpower as a layer is emotional intelligence and work around emotional intelligence. So every year we try to do a book with the team. And one year we did Emotional Intelligence for Sales Success, which had the sister book, Emotional Intelligence for Leaders. And that, I think, is just a life-changing book. Like, if you can develop your emotional intelligence skills, you can catapult your sales skills. Because really, I would argue emotional intelligence skills are more important but harder to cultivate than actual sales skills.
That's Colleen Stanley, by the way, who wrote that. It's a fantastic book.
Yes.
Love that. Is there a podcast that you listen to? Are you a podcast person?
I am not a podcast person, but I do love Huberman Labs.
Stop the lightning. It's so good, isn't it?
Love him. Yes. I just love learning. I love the way he delivers like complicated information. And I could listen to that all day.
Me too. I love that he gives you the data and the science behind the concepts.
Yeah.
So you know they're not just guesses.
Yeah. And he's like, I don't really care what you do, but here's the reality.
That's it. Did you see his episode on sleeping recently?
No, not yet.
It's unbelievable. If you wake up in the morning and you can let your eyes go outside and get low levels of light in the morning, you will feel more awake because your body is wired to know when the sun is coming up. It raises the levels of whatever it is in your body that wakes you up.
That makes sense.
Makes so much sense to me. Christine, thank you very, very much. Thank you for everything you're doing for the industry. Thank you for sharing unabashedly with our audience. And thank you for clarifying something that I think everyone is confused about, which is I want a bigger life, which means I need to have a bigger business. How do I go build it? We are grateful.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let me just sum this up for you. She's a genius. And she's a genius because she has made it so simple. And let's just go through this. Number one, you need to stand for your first hire. And that has to be wildly important to you. Even if you think that you're honoring it and that you're making it important, you're still probably minimizing it. That's what she's saying, is who you hire first literally will change the trajectory of your business. Number two, once you have that person, you have to build in some systems. And here's what I'm going to say to you. Be cautious about just making all of it up on your own. Meaning creativity is great, but it should be creativity on top of proven models that are already there. You are not the first real estate professional to try to build this thing at scale. Go get the best systems from the agents that have already been wildly successful. By the way, that's what this show is all about. And then add your creativity on top of that. Begin with a foundational base that's proven. Then understand exactly who it is you are, your values, and what you're building, or you're ultimately going to attract the wrong people during this phase, which is now building the team. I got to go out and bring in people that I want to have around me, that believe in my vision, and that believe in the habits and the way that we're going to live. And then finally, and it's so simple but often overlooked, you have to be growing as a leader. The path of any business mirrors the personal growth of that business's leaders, period. So what are you going to do to keep growing? That's what she said, and that's why she's so successful. Friends, go forth and do likewise. Now, I usually end the show with that, but before you go, I want to tell you about something really fun. So we actually went out and caught up with Christine, and we filmed on location in her marketplace so that you could, number one, hear her story more in depth, number two, put a face with the name, and number three, see exactly how this business works. In this Thursday's drop, when you get the email, there is going to be a link in it which will take you to that video. Go take a look. I think you're going to enjoy it. And now, go forth and do likewise. There it is. That wraps another episode. Friends, I don't know what you're taking out of this. I really don't. I'll tell you what I want you to be taking out of it, which is these are the people that are having tremendously big lives. And the reason it's happening is because they're setting up the models and systems to do just that. Gary Keller told me that leadership is teaching people how to think so that they do the things they need to do when they need to do them, so that ultimately they get the things they want when they want to have them. And that's what I want for you. You're all leaders, but it begins with leading ourselves. If you're enjoying this podcast, I want you to click the subscribe button anywhere that you get your podcasts. We want to be the voice in your head every single week, and every week we're dropping new content. We also send out a newsletter at the conclusion of every show to make sure that you get the highest points and the models and systems that were discussed. So if you want to sign up, I need your name and your email address. Head over to the millionaireagentpodcast.com. millionaireagentpodcast.com. Enter your name and your email address, and every week that newsletter will be in your box. Friends, you just went on a journey. I hope that what happens between now and the next time we meet is absolutely wonderful for you. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information. Warning. You must comply with the TCPA and any other federal, state, or local laws, including for B2B calls and texts. Never call or text a number on any do not call list, and do not use an auto dialer or artificial voice or pre-recorded messages without proper consent. Contact your attorney to ensure your compliance.